Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Our first three speakers tonight will be Jamie, Catherine, and Nick.
Good evening, my name's Jamie, I'm an alcoholic. Well, thanks Wayne for asking me to share, and basically all I'm going to try and do is just carry the message of recovery to the still suffering alcoholic. Basically, what I've found here, I came to AA very, very mad, mentally ill, severely mentally ill. I was offered the solution, which is the 12 steps, which has enabled me to have a spiritual awakening, and it's completely transformed my life. I'm a completely different person today. The person that stands here now is 110% completely different from the person who walked in. When I walked in on December the 6th, 2005, I was 19 years and 10 months old. I was a little chavvy teenage kid from the council estate. I used to wear a long Argyle Mac with an Argyle baseball cap, Rockport boots, and I thought I was the man, do you know what I mean? But underlying all this stuff, underlying this front, I was fearful, I was insecure, I was afraid, do you know what I mean? I was lost in the world, I had no social skills, I was anxious and I was just lost, do you know what I mean? I needed help, and the only thing that I could do was to stop these feelings was to drink. And what I realised is when I drank, it would kick off this craving and I would drink to oblivion. When I come to AA, I learned it's called the phenomenon of craving, and it's coupled with a mental obsession. So when I'm drinking to oblivion, I'm kicking off, I'm going mad, I'm putting my head through windows, I'm smashing things up, nicking people's cars, drink driving, horrendous things, collapsing, taking overdoses, waking up in the morning. A normal person would think, my drinking's not right, I'm not going to drink again. But me, I'll think I'll go on the drink again today, and I'll be off again. And basically, that's how it went for me. I started drinking about 13 or 14 years old. My mum's an alcoholic, so I thought, I'm a little bit insecure. I'm not as confident as the football team and the rugby team and all these kids that look like they can just do life. I'm not as confident as them because my mum's an alcoholic. The way I brought up, that's why I'm a bit insecure. So I've found that when I drink alcohol, it made me feel very confident, very powerful. It made me be the person that I wanted to be. Because when I was drunk, I could be this person, I could be Jack the Lad, I could be confident, do you know what I mean? I could fit in, I had social skills and I just didn't care. That was to sum it up, I didn't care, do you know what I mean? And this behaviour just went on and on. I started when I was 13 or 14, I left school, no GCSEs, no nothing. And I just went on cashing hand jobs, building sites, get paid, go to the pub, get drunk. And when I was a kid, I got knocked over, so when I turned 18, I had a lump sum. When I went to my cash point when I was 18, there was thousands of pounds and I just kept getting drunk more and more and more and my life was getting worse. But somewhere amongst it all, I'd keep getting arrested all the time when I was in Crown Court. Actually, I was in Magistrates Courts all the times and they sent me to Crown Court and they were going to send me to prison. And I just needed to stop, to be honest with you. Somewhere along the line, I only drank for 6 years, but at the end of my drinking, somewhere I knew it wasn't the way to do life, do you know what I mean? I knew I wasn't doing life the way it should be done. I knew you're not supposed to get drunk all the time and that's it, and kick off and get arrested by the police and being caught and be on probation. I knew that wasn't right, do you know what I mean? At the end of my drinking, I could see that wasn't right, but I just couldn't stop drinking. Physically, I couldn't stop drinking. And when I was stopped for 2 weeks, is my world record. I've stayed stopped for 2 weeks. And during those 2 weeks, I was insecure, I was depressed, I was miserable. I felt so just tense then, horrible, and like hated everyone, and I hated myself more. And so I just kept drinking. And basically, like I said, they was going to send me to prison, and I went to probation. And he said to me, I said, I keep drinking because I never feel good when I'm sober and I can't stop drinking, but I want to stop. I want to be a good person, but I just can't stop. And I was generally at my wit's end at this time. I'd find myself in my bedroom in the mornings crying, what is wrong with me? There's something wrong with me. I can't stop. It was getting worse. I was using harder substances. I was becoming, falling in with even worse people, scousers and drug addicts and dealers and all different sorts of people. But the problem was, when I was on my own in my bedroom, that's when it was there. When I was on my own in my bedroom, the fear, the terror, the bewilderment, the despair, the what am I doing in this life? Who am I? What's this place? What am I here for? Fear, 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 uncertainty. Who am I? What am I supposed to do? That's all I had. And anyway, I got told to come to AA, but I said I can't go to AA because there's people there. I can't do people. I'm socially anxious. I can't go to AA because there's people there. He said, go to AA. So I just, alright, so I came to AA. And anyway, this was the predicament I found myself in. I couldn't stay sober, but when I was sober, I couldn't do life. So I couldn't stop drinking, but when I did for the 2 weeks maximum, I couldn't do anything. I couldn't speak to people. I had no social skills, no education, no real employment. What was I supposed to do? And I came and I listened and I heard the solution. We suffer from alcoholism. That's the problem. Our liquor is only a symptom. This is what I already knew. I knew I drank because of the way I am when I'm sober. That's why I drink. I thought I had schizoid personality disorder, manically depressed, but I'm not. I'm just an alcoholic. I suffer from alcoholism. And I learned that our liquor is only a symptom and a spiritual malady. And they said the solution is a spiritual awakening. I never heard of God. I'm from a council estate. My mum's an alcoholic. My dad's a heroin addict. I'm a chav. I'm from a council estate. I've never heard of God. Anyway, because I was desperate and I wanted to be good. I really wanted to be good. I really wanted to. In my heart, I wanted to be this person. I wanted to be able to speak to people. I wanted to have a good life. I wanted to be able to just achieve and get on with life. So I kept listening. They said, get a big book, get a sponsor, work for the 12 steps and you can have this spiritual awakening. And I was only 19 and 10 months old at the time. But for 7 weeks I kept relapsing, I kept drinking and I just couldn't get step one, I just couldn't get it. I was going around saying to Welsh Nick, what about this step one, Leroy, what about this step one? He was going, don't be so silly, everyone's got step one. But that's Leroy's story, but anyway. In the end, the day came. January the 28th, 2006 was my first day of sobriety. I was 20 years old. I'm 22 years and 7 months old and 2 years and 7 months sober. Basically, I've gone through the 12 steps and basically I've had that spiritual awakening from God that I didn't believe in. Do you know what I mean? It's miraculous. It's a miracle. If there's anybody in the room who thinks, oh, but God isn't real, or I don't quite believe in God, does it sound like where I come from? I believed in God because I've been transformed 100%, utterly, then how can you deny it? My little analogy that I thought up to myself, how I tried to explain to people, but how do you know it's worked? When you're sober and you drink 10 pints of Stella, you know something's changed within yourself, yeah? Because you're sober, you've had 10 pints, you're very drunk. It's the same. You come here, lost, afraid, you take the steps and something changes. That dramatic, do you know what I mean? And basically that's what's happened to me today. I was in Crown Court, I was going to be going to prison. I was just lost in the world, I couldn't stop drinking. And today I'm 2 years and 7 months sober, I've gone to university, I've just finished year one, I'm going to be doing year two soon. And I'm more psyched up for year two than I was for year one. I feel so fantastic. I feel physically fit, I'm healthy. I've passed my driving test, I'm going to get a car soon. Just everything's opening up. The whole world is opened up. I've found something brand new in life. Just to try and re-emphasize and smash the message home. The message is, get a big book, get a sponsor, work through the 12 steps. Our liquor is only a symptom. The problem is alcoholism. That feeling of lostness and lack of understanding and what's the point of what the world and all things that gets... For me, I've been completely transformed. It says in the big book, it gets incredibly more wonderful as time passes. This spiritual awakening, I've taken the 12 steps. I am today recovered from alcoholism on a daily basis, contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition, which I love doing. I love step 11. Some people say they find it hard. How can you find it hard? I've been transformed. Bang! I'm brand new. What's there to miss? What's there to miss? If I miss something, what do you mean there ain't no God? Well, I'm not here then, do you know what I mean? It's that simple to me. It really is. It's so simple to me, it really is. I love doing step 11, I'm going to keep moving forward, I'm going to go to university and, well, that's it. It's just completely a miracle. If you're a newcomer, get a big book, get a sponsor, work the steps. Cheers.
And we're going to top that. Gosh. Right, my name's Catherine, I'm an alcoholic and... I'm very grateful to be in my home group, and my sponsors told me I need to speak English tonight, so I'm going to try my best. My sobriety date is the 15th of April 1996, and when I arrived in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was pretty much like Jamie, really. I mean, I just felt awful, and I didn't know that I was an alcoholic. When I was drinking, I didn't I didn't know what was wrong with me. Like, I thought, I'm a manic depressive, I'm a schizophrenic. I was a bit like that. I thought, what is the matter with me? I knew something was wrong with me, but I didn't think it was my drinking. I'd tried to control my drinking when I was drinking. I never actually tried to stop, but I tried to control it, and I just couldn't. And whenever I had one drink, I always ended up absolutely paralytic. And when I found out I was an alcoholic and I arrived in AA, I knew that I was powerless over alcohol. I absolutely knew that I could not have one drink, and I knew that one drink for me was going to kill me, basically, and I knew that I couldn't do it. And I arrived in AA via a treatment centre, and I was separated from alcohol for the last time. And I felt absolutely awful. I mean, when I first came to AA, there was like a rush of hope of, oh, God, I know what's wrong with me. I'm an alcoholic. All I need to do is not drink and go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. And I was coming, and I was not drinking, and I'd gone through I was in a treatment centre, and I spent 7.5 months in a treatment centre altogether, and I just felt awful. Life for me without alcohol was absolutely unbearable, do you know what I mean? And that was at that point when I truly realised what it meant to be alcoholic. It was when I stopped drinking for the last time that I realised how much of an alcoholic I was. I'd gone through these treatments, and I'd spent 7.5 months in there of intensive group therapy and one-to-one counselling. I thought, I can just get to the bottom of what's the matter. Maybe it's because this happened to me, or because that happened to me, or because of this. If I could just find out and get to the bottom of what's the matter with me. And I just couldn't. And I left treatment, and I was still feeling miserable and suicidal. I used to go to meetings every single day. And one thing I did here, I heard about getting a sponsor. And if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, there are sponsors and there are sponsors. And some people couldn't sponsor a lemon, and that's the truth. And, but I got a sponsor. The first sponsor I had didn't have a sponsor, never been through the 12 steps. The second sponsor I had didn't have a sponsor, not been through the 12 steps. And I was in Alcoholics Anonymous desperately trying to hold on, do you know what I mean, that white-knuckle sobriety. And I'd heard about reading the big book, and I was reading the big book, and I remember reading the doc's opinion. It says, you know, most people make the supreme sacrifice rather than continue to fight. And I was considering on a daily basis making the supreme sacrifice rather than continuing to fight. I could not fight it any longer, and I'd have given anything to not be an alcoholic, and I'd have given anything to be able to go out and get that sense of ease and comfort that I knew would come at once by having a few drinks. But I knew that I was alcoholic, I knew I was powerless over alcohol, I knew I couldn't have just one drink, and that was an awful, awful place to be. And I used to come to meetings every day, and I used to hear chapter five read out, you know, rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path. You know, it says, but there are those with grave emotional and mental disorders. And by this time, I was starting to think, am I somebody, have I got a grave emotional and mental disorder? Maybe I'm somebody that it's just not going to work for me. I've got a grave emotional and mental disorder. And, you know, it says, but even they do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. I think maybe I can't be honest. Maybe I'm constitutionally incapable of being honest. But I think I'm sharing everything that I'm meant to be doing. I think I'm being as honest as I can. And it was just awful, you know. And the one thing, I can't say, the one thing that kills more alcoholics than anything else is that feeling of difference, do you know what I mean? Somehow my case is different, and somehow you just don't understand what it's like for me. And I remember feeling like that. I've never been in meetings. I remember coming specifically to this meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I used people, you know, just consistently sharing the message. And, you know, just like Jamie did, you know, they've gone through the steps, they've had this spiritual, and I'm thinking, I just didn't think it was possible for me. I thought there's something different about them. I mean, when I was new, if I'd heard Jamie share, do you know what I mean? I thought, I'm not like you. Do you know what I mean? It's not going to work for me. You don't understand how sick I am. But I mean, I just kept coming back. And eventually, I got a sponsor that had something that I wanted, and I got a sponsor that sponsored me through the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I truly have not looked back. I mean, all that counselling and all that therapy that I had that never sorted me out, I mean, I did my step 4 and 5, my fearless and firm orange, as it's laid out in the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it sorted me out. I remember when I did that, I remember when I did my 5 with my sponsor, just for the first time, feeling like I was going to be all right. I just knew that everything was going to be okay. Do you know what I mean? It's like the fear. I just knew, and I just felt good for the first time in my life. I remember I was one of those people, I always used to go to meetings and people would dread asking me how I was. Do you know what I mean? Because I felt bad most of the time, and I would tell you. And I remember seeing this guy, and he said, you know, how are you, Catherine? I said, oh, I feel quite happy. And I think nearly fell down the stairs in Dingles. Do you know what I mean? Because I was actually happy. And, I mean, my home group is, I mean, if you're new and you've got a problem with the word God, I mean, you can use the group as a power greater than yourself. And it's not the people in the group, do you know what I mean? But there is something in this meeting tonight that you can't see, you can't touch, but there is a power greater than you in this meeting tonight, and you can use the group as a power greater than yourself, or Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. But if you're going to choose the group as a power greater than yourself, you need to make sure the group is a power greater than yourself, because the group I was in before this, there was people having affairs, there was all sorts of stuff going on, do you know what I mean? And my home group fell apart. And because I hadn't been through the 12 steps properly, and I didn't have a God in my understanding, I fell apart with that group. Do you know what I mean? And I was just in bits. And thank God this group was here for me. And I was young like Jamie. I mean, I was 18 when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I think I was 19 when I came to this group. And I mean, I was young, I was a baby. I mean, I look back now and I was absolutely looked after in this group. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it was mainly men, do you know what I mean? And I was just looked after. I mean, to me, my home group were just a bunch of absolute gentlemen. And I tell you, this is like the safest place in the world for me. I mean, I've grown up in this group, do you know what I mean? I know it's not this... To me, this group saved my life. And I know it's not this group, it's Alcoholics Anonymous. But this group carried the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to me. And they told me precisely what I needed to do to recover from alcoholism. And, you know, they looked after me so I could grow up in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I have been given a great life, but I think the trick is, I mean, I've been sober for 12 years, and my life today, just like Jamie said, is completely nothing. I am nothing like the person that I was when I walked through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can get through life with a degree of stability and consistency that I just, emotional stability and consistency, that was just beyond me before I came here. Do you know what I mean? The things that I've got through, you know, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and then big ups and those downs and those ups and those downs, you know, 1 minute I was ecstatically happy, the next minute I was absolutely miserable and suicidal, you know. And I've slowly, over time, by practicing the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've balanced out, you know what I mean? And I get through stuff now, and, you know, and the responsibility and the stuff that I deal with is just, you know, beyond my wildest dreams. And, you know, and it's just, you know, my family relationships, everything is brilliant in my life today. Well, I said the trick is I need to keep doing it. I mean, I need to keep practicing the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I have struck gold, you know, and if you're here tonight and this is your first meeting, you've struck gold, but I can only keep it as long as I mine it for the rest of my life and insist on giving away the entire product. You know, I have to continue to do this. And the way that I continue to do that is by doing service in Alcoholics Anonymous, having a good, strong home group that I'm committed. My mum used to say to me when I was little, when I was growing up in a teenager, give you an inch and you take a mile. That was me. Give me an inch and I take a mile. And I can't give myself an inch in Alcoholics Anonymous. I need a structured, disciplined program to work. And in order for it all to fit into place, I need a sponsor. And it's not that I'm dependent on a sponsor, do you know what I mean? I'm dependent on the God and my understanding. But I need a sponsor, just somebody that I'm accountable to. Just somebody that I have to phone my sponsor every week, and it just keeps me walking around, just keeps me towing the line and just putting one foot in front of the other, and it keeps me doing these things, because for me, give me an inch and I'll take a mile. But anyway, I've had a fantastic life in Alcoholics Anonymous, and if anybody's new and you are sick and tired of being sick and tired and you're feeling shit, sorry for swearing, but if you are, do you know what I mean, there is a life here and you need not feel like that. And when I was told that, as I was told, you need never feel the way that you're feeling ever again. You need never feel like that ever again. You know, you can recover and you can get better and you don't have to feel like that anymore. And the other thing that kind of clinched it for me when I was new, because I was such a screw-up and I screwed everything up. I was like, Jamie, no GCSEs, didn't go to school, didn't want to go to school. He couldn't make me do anything, you know what I mean? Rebel without a clue. And, you know, but I was told that I would recover despite myself, and that kind of clinched it for me, because I knew if it was left down to me to keep me sober, get me sober, that I would screw it up. But I was told that I would recover despite myself, just by putting the actions in of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've got a great life, and, you know, anyone doing, like I said, get a sponsor, and thanks for listening to me. Thank you.
My name's Nick and I'm an alcoholic. Thanks, Jamie and Catherine. And if you are new tonight, then welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the heart of Alcoholics Anonymous in Plymouth. I am an alcoholic of the hopeless type, and yet I have recovered completely from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And what I'm going to do briefly is share why I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless type and how I have recovered. I was an extreme example of self-will run riot. Growing up, I could not be told. Whether you were my parent, teacher, employer, policeman, I could not be told. I wanted to do it my way. I was always in conflict with the world. I was self-will run riot. I just didn't want to do what I was told, ever. And as a result, I just always seemed to be at loggerheads with the world. I just didn't want to do what other people wanted me to do. I wanted to do it my way. And as a result, life was painful, and it became extremely painful. And it wasn't long before I found that alcohol made me feel better. Like Catherine said, that sense of ease and comfort that came at once just by taking a few drinks. Now, that might not be that different to a lot of people who have a drink, okay? But I was different, okay? Because once I took any alcohol whatsoever into my system, it would set up this phenomenon of craving. So I'd have to finish the job. Now, I could not control or moderate how much I drank once I started. I did not know what was going to happen once I took the first drink. I lost control. And again, that may be not dissimilar to many people who drink. Once they have a drink, they don't stop. They go over the top. But if that's the case, they would simply realize drinking wasn't for them, okay? But the real killer blow for me, and if you identify with this, then this is really the killer blow, is that the next day, or the next day, or the next day, okay, I would be unable to bring into my consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering or the humiliation of a month or even a week ago to stop me from picking up the first drink again. I was without mental defense against the first drink. And if you can identify with alcohol in those terms, and I'm afraid there is very little hope. The chances of an alcoholic of the type described in the basic text, like me, are slim. And unless I can find a way of life based upon spiritual principles, there is very little hope for me. However, I have recovered. But I had to be, as Jamie said, it has to be smashed home again and again. I had to fully capitulate to my, I am an alcoholic of the hopeless type. I am unable to take any alcohol whatsoever into my system. Okay. But much worse than that, because the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind. Okay. I was unable to live life sober. And that was the state I was in at 26, a blood puking, shaking, shivering alcoholic wreck when I crawled in to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, I'm convinced to this day that it is that level of surrender that has made recovery really pretty straightforward for me. If you are at the end tonight, if you are thinking that when you leave this room, you just go and throw yourself under a bus, you're in with a chance. I hope that when you regain consciousness this morning, the four horsemen of the apocalypse, terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair, were galloping across your breath. That is how I felt when I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, and it has stood me in good stead. When I walked in, and here was haven at last. There was something in the eyes of the men. I could see you guys had recovered. It was quite simple. I could see, and yet your stories, you had been worse than me in some cases, and yet now, you just had a poise about, that you had clearly recovered, and I wanted what you had. I just gave in. I remember in the, I remember first couple of days in, dripping with sweat, dressing gown on, reading my big book. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. And I'm just thinking, I've been wrong. All my 26 years, I've been wrong. These guys are right. I was wrong. And, thank God, I had step one. I could see I was powerless over alcohol. It was my master. But more than that, I could see that any life, run by self-will was doomed to failure. I had to lose self, but there seemed no way to lose self without God's help. And that is the program of recovery that Alcoholics Anonymous has to offer. But because I was beaten, because I had fully conceded to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless type, I was willing to go to any lengths to recover from my alcoholism. And, you know, I followed instruction. You know, I mean, you also, you got a sponsor. You know, I just asked a man to show me precisely how he had taken the 12 steps. And he became my sponsor and he gave me some actions to take. And I had resigned from the debating society. I immersed myself in Alcoholics Anonymous. And very quickly, my sponsor wanted me to take responsibility for my own recovery. You know, and I just remember I'd given in. You know, I mean, that surrender just in itself was an uplifting experience. And I was, you know, I was more than willing to believe in a power greater than myself, as it was put to me. And as Catherine said, you know, if I needed to start somewhere simpler than that, you know, if I wanted to use the power of an AA group, that's fine. But again, like Catherine said, it's not the people in the group. You know, there's something else. You know, it's the group conscience, like it talks about in tradition 2. You know, a loving God as He may express Himself. You know, however you want to dress it up. You know, we're talking about a willingness to believe in God. You know, and I was as willing as only the dying can be. You know, it's as simple as that. If you want to recover, if you want to, you know, if you don't want to die, then, you know, I mean, you've got two choices. You know, and we're all faced with it once we come in. You know, I can either carry on to the bitter end, trying to blot out the misery of my existence as best I could, or I could accept spiritual help. And I accepted spiritual help because I was willing to make the effort, and I honestly wanted to. And, you know, I mean, to be honest, once I got step one, once I'd just given in completely, it was easy. I just followed, you know, my sponsor took me through the 12 steps. I diligently carried out the actions. You know, I started getting spiritual principles into my life. And, you know, the insanity around the first drink was removed almost immediately. You know, I was given a spiritual defense. But much more than that, as I went through the 12 steps, you know, I had a spiritual awakening. You know, something happened. My roots grasped new soil. You know, I mean, I was given access to a higher power, a power greater than myself, that has enabled me, you know, to drastically reduce my self-centeredness, to drastically reduce my pride, to drastically reduce all those defects of character that were making my life so painful, reduce them to an extent that I'm able to live comfortably, you know, and happily and sober in this world. So I no longer find life so painful that I have to drink. I no longer find life such a chore and just, I mean, you guys, when I was, I mean, I wanted you dead, really. And now it's just not like that. You know, I am now able to fit myself to the world rather than trying to adjust everything to what I want. You know, I can see my place in the world. I'm able to be a productive member of society. You know, I'm able to be of use. I'm able to take responsibility these days. And, now, really, the hardest, the single most difficult thing I've got to do, having had a spiritual awakening, you know, having recovered fully from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, you know, I now just need to maintain, you know, the new order of things. You know, I got into good habits early. Thank you, Mike. And I just need to maintain, you know, the what I found. You know, I need to, you know, like Catherine said, I want to take responsibility of my home group. I want it to be the best home group in the world. You know, it continued sponsorship. You know, I mean, my sponsor was the first man in my life I was willing to just defer to, willingly. I mean, my sponsor has told me probably on less than the fingers of one hand, has he ever told me specifically, you do this, other than the direction for how to take the 12 steps. My sponsor wants me to take responsibility for my own recovery. However, you know, the obedience that I practice with the principles of the 12 steps and the obedience I have to the will of my home group, my sponsor, you know, are a great aid to humility. You know, and I mean, you know, it's God that keeps me sober, not my sponsor. But honestly, I can convince myself that God is telling me to rob Nat West. You know what I mean? You know, it's a sponsor who keeps the spiritual life a reality. You know, I just check in with my sponsor, just make sure I'm not going off the path. You know what I mean? That's what, you know, I need a sponsor. And, you know, and by having a sponsor, by, you know, and I'm a follower, really, you know, at heart, I'm a follower. But by being willing to follow, you know, by having that humility, I've been given the gift of being able to lead, you know, and take responsibility where it's necessary. And, you know, it's just a great life in Alcoholics Anonymous. I should be dead. You know, I should be dead. You know, but not only am I not dead, I'm living a comfortable, you know, relatively productive, useful life. And not drinking is a doddle. You know, if you are suffering tonight, you know, then the good news is, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. But, you know, I have to be beaten and I have to be willing to go to any length. You know, if I'm ready to, you know, to go to any length, then I'm ready to take certain steps. And, thanks very much indeed. It's a great life sober. And, just like very quickly say thank you to the class of 2001 and my sponsor Wayne. Thanks very much.
Thank you, everyone. I would now like to introduce tonight's final speaker, Peter.
Hi, my name's Peter. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm also a recovered alcoholic. My sponsor tells me I'm supposed to tell people that I'm a recovered alcoholic because otherwise it's false modesty. It's the first promise in the big book. Thousands of men and women have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. My sober date is December the 11th, 1981. That's a long time ago. It might not impress you, but it impresses the hell out of me. Because I was a real alcoholic. And I started drinking when I was 14, and I didn't quit till I was 34. And I never quit. I did marijuana maintenance, and I did some psychedelics. I was a good hippie. It was the 60s. There was lots of stuff like that around. But there was always alcohol there. And most of them, God willing, in 11 days' time, I'm going to be 61. And if I thought I was going to live this long, I'd have taken better care of myself way back then. And I apologize if I lose my voice. I've had a throat infection. But it's doing okay so far. That's all you need to know about my drinking. I started when I was 14. I quit when I was 34. I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous 34 going on 14. Nothing had happened in between times. All I'd done was got drunk. Now, I was very, very fortunate in 1981 that I walked into a room of Alcoholics Anonymous where the people were using the big book because that's all they knew. There were a bunch of Scots people in Jersey, in Channel Islands. And they'd arrived there and somebody started AA about 7 years before that. And they had nobody with any experience of staying sober. And we always used to say we were the blind being led by the partially sighted. But you see, they had a guidebook. And we were taken through the steps. I was taken through the steps by a guy called Billy. He was a truck driver from Glasgow. I hated Scotsmen with a passion. God sent me a Scotsman to be my sponsor. 12-stepped me wonderfully. Took me through the steps. And then I got very, very busy with life. And I started to take my life back again. I did some stuff in AA. I continued to carry the message and I got busy and I got involved in service and I ended up going to delegate a conference and all this kind of stuff. And then I dropped out of art school a long time ago and I was merchant seaman. I went back to sea. And I kind of slowly but surely separated myself from the fellowship and from all the things that the 12 steps asked me to do. And I stopped practicing these principles in all my affairs. And without knowing it, the malady returned. And somewhere along the lines of about 10 years sober, I got so busy that I decided that I was going to get mine. And a couple of years later, I set out with an absolute plan to marry money because I was fed up with working. And I deserved mine because wasn't I 12 years sober now? You know, and I had too many years and not enough days. And it took me down a path. And I won't go into any details about this path because this is an open meeting. And I don't want to damage anybody by relating the story. Not in here, but if anybody that may hear this, okay? Because that's part of my amend, if you like. But I ended up finding the right person after a bunch of research, which I'll go into later. And it was fine. And I ended up in Newton Popperford, just outside Exeter. And after about 18 months, I locked myself in a room one night. For 3 days, I was in that room, rocking and saying Hail Marys. And I didn't know what the hell was wrong with me. I had no idea. I was 16 years sober. I had no idea what was wrong with me. I was baffled. I was as baffled, and I hadn't had a drink for 16 years. I hadn't had a drug for 16 years. I'd been sober and clean for 16 years. And I would have told you, when I turned up at the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous again, that, oh, I stopped going to meetings. No, it happened a long time earlier than that. I stopped practicing these principles in all my affairs, and I'll talk about the principles in a minute. And you see, it says that we get a daily reprieve subject to our spiritual condition. But my spiritual condition is subject to doing certain disciplines. And I'm very, very rigid about doing those disciplines today. Because I don't want to go back there. Because I tell you what, being dry drunk at 16 years sober is worse than being a wet drunk walking into Alcoholics Anonymous after 20 years of drinking. Don't go there. You don't need to go there. Don't do what I did. What happened was very interesting as well along the way. It's very subtly, and I only saw this with hindsight, is that something changed about what we did in Alcoholics Anonymous. Somewhere between 1981 and 1998, something changed. And when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, the emphasis was working the steps. And we talked about God, and we talked about working the steps, and we talked about helping other alcoholics. Somewhere on the line, it became some kind of self-help deal, where we talked about our troubles in the meetings. We didn't carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous in the meetings anymore. We talked about my day, my way. And something changed. And I joined them, talking about my way, my day. After I'd locked myself in this room for 3 days, catatonic, I eventually dragged myself into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in Exeter. Sunday night meeting. I sat in the Sunday night meeting in Exeter and I was crying. I was in a hell of a state. And I listened and I listened and I listened and I listened. And everybody, right at the end of the meeting, somebody said to me, has anybody else got anything to share? And I said, yeah, my name's Peter, I'm an alcoholic, I'm 16 years sober, and I'm out of my mind, I don't know what's happening. And there was silence. Nobody offered me anything. End of the meeting, somebody came up to me and said, when was the last time you worked the steps? And I said, well, I was in my amends in about 18 months. I said, yeah, about 16 years ago. And they said, did you have food today? I said, yeah. He said, did you have food yesterday? I said, yeah. He said, why do you have food today then? He said, you're trying to live on a spiritual experience you had 16 years ago. And it ain't working, is it? I said, no, it ain't. He said, maybe you should come with us to study the book a little bit and we'll see what we can do. Now, about that time, I had a gift. Now, not everybody realized this was a gift, but I had a gift of a detached retina. And I got rushed in the hospital for a detached retina operation. And you've got to lay down after that for about 6 weeks. And I had a bunch of tapes of Joe and Charlie, and I had a big book, and I had some writing stuff and a pencil. Because I couldn't find anybody that knew how to do this. I couldn't find anybody, either in Exeter, in Devon, or in Jersey, where I ended up back in the Channel Islands. Couldn't find anybody, so I had to use Joe and Charlie. And I'm laying down on one side, kind of. And I did everything that this book asked me to do in the first 165 pages. Well, not even that, actually. Basically, in what it says with how it works, in how it works, and into action. That's all it is. There's only about, 20 pages. There's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Look, 20 pages, step 3, or step 4 through to 11. That's all it is. It's a big book. But there it is there, look. Now that saved my life twice. It saved my life as a wet drunk. It saved my life as a dry drunk. It saved my life twice. I'm a born again big book number. Best kept secret in Alcoholics Anonymous in chapter 5. Yeah. Why is it the best kept secret in Alcoholics Anonymous? Because they read it out at the beginning of almost every meeting and nobody listens to it. In this group it's different because you have a speaker group. But most groups, nobody hears it because they're all thinking about what they're going to say when they finish reading chapter 5. And it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And I change that into, rarely have we seen a person thoroughly follow our path. Thank you. Guys who shared earlier. Thank you. It's very rare I come into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and hear three speakers talk about what I talk about. Very rare. And I know there's some other folks in there as well who will talk about the same stuff. It's great. Really exciting. I don't normally do this kind of thing. What I do, I do quite a lot of sort of step stuff and step workshops and big book things and whatever. I don't talk about me an awful lot. But this chapter 5, one of the things that, where am I? I just moved it. I don't quote the big book that often. This was me. After I'd been sober for 16 years, and I got into this position where I was, it says here, more than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. This is 16 years sober. The outer world, he represents his stage character, the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation. Well, 16 years sober. Arrived. But in his heart he knows he doesn't deserve it. This inconsistency is, or the inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. And my sponsor tells me any kind of spree. I'm sober today. I'm recovered today, but I can still have sprees. And I don't have to be drinking sprees. They can be eating sprees, they can be gambling sprees, they can be sex sprees, they can be any kind of spree that fixes me if I'm not spiritually fit. That's why I've got to have the discipline of these 12 steps, particularly the last three. I come from a bunch of folks who tell me that I should work the steps and rework the steps on a regular basis. I go through the steps about every year. Sometimes every 18 months. Since 10 years ago. After I went through the steps again and had a second real, it really was a spiritual experience. It wasn't just an awakening, which I may have been the first time. I sought out people who knew how to do this because I couldn't find any. And I sought people out and listened very, very carefully to what they had to say. And I sought out people that kept it in here, in the big book. Because I don't want anybody's opinion of the 12 steps. I want their experience of the 12 steps. I try and share my experience of this book with people and with you, not my opinion of this book. It's very important. There's a difference. There is a great deal of difference. I sometimes go to step meetings where they don't use this book, where they use another book. And I've got nothing against the 12 and 12. There's some wonderful stuff in there. From the perspective of about 16 years sober, which is when how old Bill was in sobriety when he wrote it. There's some wonderful stuff in there. But for a newcomer, there's no direction on how to work the steps. But what you get around a 12 and 12 meeting is you get a lot of people sharing their opinion about what was written by someone who was 16 years sober when he wrote it without having any experience of actually working the steps. And what I was told was, this idea, and it was mentioned earlier on, that we cannot bring into our consciousness of even a month or a week or a month ago, we are without defense against the first drink. When I say to a newcomer who comes into a meeting, I say, how long do you think you got before the idea of a drinking comes? Because you see, the unmanageability in the first step, after that dash, there's two ideas in the first step. First step is I'm powerless over alcohol, that's the allergy. Yeah, fine, I get thirstier. The more I drink it, the more thirstier I get. I never understood that until I came to AA, and I got a real grip on that. They said, well, this idea of analogy interests us. You don't have to know what the chemical situation is. All you need to know is that a drink takes a drink once you drink. And if you drink, you're screwed. You're going to get drunk. That's my experience. The other part is that my life is unmanageable. It's not the crazy junk that happens to me when I drink that makes my life unmanageable. Because that's just the true consequences of my drinking. It says in Doctor's Opinion, we cannot after a while differentiate the true from the false. What he means by that is, I can't differentiate the true results of my drinking from the false, which is the second part of the first step. The true results of my drinking, I lost jobs, I lost money, I lost relationships, I lost houses, I lost cars, I lost blood, I lost lots of stuff. That's the true consequences. That wasn't my unmanageability. My unmanageability was that every time I said and honestly meant it, I'll never do that again, I quit, I couldn't make it stick. I would be drunk again. So how long you got? You got a week? You got a month? You're going to wait till you get better to work the steps? I come from a place where we get you through the steps quick. Because we don't know. I don't know when you're going to take a drink. If you come to me for sponsorship, I don't know when you're going to take a drink. Week, month? You need some power. It says here, powerless over alcohol. What do I want? Power. See, I was a power seeker right from the very start. I felt powerful when I drank. That's in a way, was an indication that I was different from other people. Normal people, when they drink, get sloppy. They go sleepy. They get a bit dizzy and they quit. When I drank, I got fired up. You put enough drink in me and I want to go party. Big time. And then I usually want to go somewhere. Often another country. I was one of those guys. In blackouts, I ended up in weird places. With weird people. Sort out sordid places, you bet. Yeah, you bet. Done all that stuff. And, see, I need a power. And then it says, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And for a long time, I thought I had to have an idea about what that power was. Because I couldn't take step two until I had this idea about what this power was. And it's very common. I come across this a lot. Well, how do we come to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity? By working the rest of the steps. That's how I came to believe. I couldn't make it up. I had no idea what God looked like. I still don't really know. But I know the power is there because I've accessed it. But until I've accessed it, I've no idea what that power is. That's a bit of a conundrum, really. And it can restore me to sanity. What sanity do I need to be restored to? I need to be restored to the sanity around the decision to drink, based on the reality of my drinking, which is the true results of my drinking. So first of all, they're saying that I'm powerless. Then they're saying I'm unmanageable. Now they're saying that I've got to believe in a power greater than me to restore me to sanity. So I'm insane. So I'm powerless, unmanageable, insane. Now I'm going to have to make a decision. We now make a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God, as we understand. I don't understand God. Do I have to actually understand God before I can take step three? I don't believe so. My experience is that if I make a decision to work the next nine steps, I'm going to come to understand a power greater than me. So I can do first three steps in about 10 minutes. It's obvious that I'm powerless over alcohol because every time I drink I get drunk. It's obvious if I'm at the right place. But it does say that we have to concede to our innermost selves. And it says smash home, smash home. And it says some very powerful stuff around step one. Are you really, really convinced that you're alcoholic? And I've got to ask myself now, 26 years sober, am I really convinced at 26 years without a drink that I'm an alcoholic? I actually got that allergy. Can I remember it that much that I got that allergy? And I have no doubt. Because when it says in here, it says, if you've got any doubts, try a few drinks. Try it more than once. Yeah? I still think that's impossible. I couldn't drink. The actual test, that wasn't written down in the book, but the actual test is two drinks every day, no less, no more, every day, religiously every day for a month. And if you don't get drunk, you may not be an alcoholic, but try it for another month, just to make sure. Now, my first thought goes, oh, I'll save them all up for the weekend. See? I can't do it. So I'm convinced. Do I think that I can't manage the decision not to drink at 26 years sober? Absolutely, because I wasn't managing the decision to drink at 16. I was sat in a room wanting to drink. I'd locked myself in the room because I wanted to drink. And suicide became an option at 16 years sober because I wanted something to fix me. Now, I have absolutely no doubt that what we're dealing with is not over-serving and just drinking too much. I am absolutely, totally convinced that this disease that we have is a disease that will kill us. This is permanent, progressive, and it is fatal. And I will die with this disease. The trick is, if there is a trick, is not to die of it. Yeah? Because that's horrible. And you don't have to drink to die of this disease. Yeah? I lost someone. Somebody committed suicide about 3 weeks ago. The day after he came out of a treatment center. I'm not knocking treatment centers. That wasn't that, but he was dry for that amount of time. He'd apparently worked to step five. I don't know. Before he went in, I tried to convince him to work step four. I got him started in inventory. But it was conditional. His sobriety was conditional on his wife coming back. After three months, his wife didn't come back. I guess that was I don't know. But this year, I know of six people who have died of this disease. None of them were drinking. Okay? None of them. So I'm very, very diligent in working this stuff. And it says, the next thing, once I've done those first three steps, it says, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory. How can I be fearless? I'm full of fear. I came in here shot full of fear. I'm going to have to get to the end, aren't I? I got two of them. Oh, wow, that went fast. Let's assume we what's in our head, because what I love is step 10, 11. Because you see, step 10 contains all of the steps. So it says we practice these principles in all our affairs. It says here, this brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory. How do we take personal inventory? I know how to do it because I've done step 4. 4 columns. Fear inventory in the big book, 2 columns. Sex inventory, as many columns as you like. But the last one is very important. We ask God to mold our sex life. That's the most important bit. Don't matter about all the other stuff. When I get to do amends, I get to find out how I show up in other people's lives. And at 16 years sober, 17 years sober, I started to make amends around relationships, and I realized that I'd been acting out in relationships exactly the same way for 16 years sober that I had been all the time I'd been drinking. But I didn't see it because I was deluded around it. And that's the problem I was with. Clancy says this is a disease of perception, and I don't get to see what I do until I knock on someone's door. This is the sound, and I hope I don't break the mic. This is the sound of step 9. Good morning. I believe I've harmed you. I may not overcome drinking unless I set the matter straight. This brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right mistakes as we go along. We're going to make some more mistakes. How about that? Excellent. I'm not a spiritual giant after all. We vigorously, see, there's another, they use lots of words like that in the big book. I'll finish off on this. I will get finished. But continue to watch for selfishness, honesty, resentment, and fear. And watching. One of my mentors says watching is a spiritual practice. It's what I do every day. I watch. I watch for this stuff. I ask for the power in the morning. I watch. I say, I continue to turn this over day, hourly. At the end of the day, the most powerful prayer I've got is, thank you. The most powerful prayer I got. I've got some other stuff on page 86, but I don't have time to go into that. But you see, I love what this does. That's the other deal. Not for me. I love what this does, because when you do this, I get to see people's eyes light up. Because I don't get to see mine. But I get to see people's eyes light up. And I'm as enthusiastic about this today, what's in this book, and about this recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous that we can have. Yeah? Not Grey Tunnel. This isn't Grey Tunnel. We come in here crawling like a worm, and we soar like eagles. Promise. Do this. Soar like eagles. Amazing. Go to university. Everything. Soar like an eagle. I went out on a helicopter today, and I landed on top of the Bishop Rock Lighthouse. Looked around, took some photographs, and came back in a helicopter. One time. Excellent. Guarantee it. Excellent. Never done that in my life before. Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to go over time.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging a dollar or two a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.